Hello, everybody. My name's Rich, and I'm an alcoholic. Forgive me if I am a bit scatterbrained. I was asked to speak when I got here. I wasn't even planning on coming to this meeting tonight. my sobriety date is 12/31/2013. I'll have a year in about 6 days, God willing. And I have a sponsor. He has a sponsor. And he has a sponsor. And I'm pretty sure he has a sponsor. Let's see. So, I guess what happened, and how it is now. Every speaker meeting I've been to since I got sober so far, it's I hear that they had a normal childhood, and that wasn't the case for me. The situations that happened to me as a child have nothing to do with why I'm an alcoholic. I believe I was born an alcoholic, but they definitely affected the way I perceive situations and approach people and things. My mom and dad moved down from Chicago. My mom was a waitress. My dad was a painter. And they didn't have much money. We lived in a really interesting neighborhood. I was one of three white kids in the elementary school, and I got picked on a lot. I really did. My dad, he was a very heavy drinker, very violent when he drank. His solution to any things that I did that were incorrect in his eyes were the back of his hand or a fist or tossing me around. And that happened, that was consistent all the way through, 16 or 17 when I finally stood up to him, and he figured that it was going to take a little bit of a battle and a fight, and he may hurt me a little bit more than he had in the past. My early childhood, all I remember is just my father yelling all the time. My mom trying to protect my sister and I, from my father when he was drinking. And don't get me wrong, I love my father. I respect him very much. He did the best he could with what he worked with. His father passed away when he was 7, and he grew up in and out of orphanages and on the streets in Chicago. I have a lot of respect for him. I love him very much. When I was about 10 or 11 years old, my sister started getting sexually molested by one of my family members, and she would tell me about it, and she would make me swear not to tell anybody else. And that's always stuck with me, and I don't think I'll ever really feel like I couldn't have done anything. I was a child. I didn't, there was nothing I really could have done, but it still affects me to this day. My sister is about 16 months younger than me, and she's my best friend. She is my rock. I'm her rock, and we spend as much time as we can together. So that was my childhood. My dad, another thing, he's a Vietnam vet. He is a higher ranking officer in a very notorious biker gang, and still is to this day. He's 70 years old and still riding a motorcycle and wreaking havoc. And my mom is the complete opposite. She is completely religious. Church. She would bring my sister and I to church every Sunday and a lot of Wednesdays. And that's where I believe that I've, gained a lot of my moral beliefs and values. Thank God for that, because I don't know where I'd be today. You know, my parents fought all the time. It was crazy. You know, I wish they would have gotten a divorce way before they did. You know, they didn't get a divorce until I was about 19, and I had already left the home before that. I don't remember my first day of school. I don't remember a lot of my first, you know, a lot of my significant first that I should remember, that a lot of normal people would remember. But I damn sure remember the first time I drank. I was about 11 years old or 12 years old, and I was sleeping over at a buddy's house, and his parents had a liquor cabinet, and you know, he pulled out a beer, and you know, we chugged it, and then you know, he had more liquor, and all, you know, immediately that feeling that I got from that drink, you know, it was, you know, it was amazing. Like, I was able to escape my thoughts. You know, my thoughts always crept up on me, and you know, I always beat myself up a lot. And when I had that first drink, I remember just feeling okay with myself. I felt like, you know, I didn't have to worry about shit, you know? And after the beer, you know, he was good, and you know, I encouraged him to get more alcohol. I got fucking drunk and got sick. His parents never found out. My parents never found out, but that started my drinking career. You know, I sought out alcohol whenever I could. And, you know, I would get it here and there. I don't think I really drank every single day, or, you know, even weekly or monthly when I was 11 or 12. You know, it's really hard to get alcohol at that age. But I never forgot that feeling. You know, drugs are a big part of my story, but they are a direct result of my alcoholism, and that's about the most detail I'll go into that part of my life. But you know, it made my bottom so much worse. You know, it made my consequences, you know, very painful. I started drinking heavily probably when I was like 14 or 15 years old. You know, going to parties. I would skip school in middle school. I was like, you know, 6th, 7th grade. When I went to school, I immediately found, you know, the people that were like me. You know, the people that just were disruptive, had family lives like me, you know, and just didn't want to have shit to do with society. And, you know, we wanted to be against everything, any laws, anything like that, you know. And God, I barely made it through school. I don't know how I did. And I'd go to school. I mean, I think I went to more Saturday schools than I did during the week. You know, I always had Saturday suspensions or internal suspensions. At one point, my guidance counselor told me that anytime I walked in her office, that she'd give me a Saturday detention. She didn't give a shit if it was just to come say hello. She didn't care. It was that bad. You know, I'm moving forward to high school. It got so bad in my house between, you know, 7th and 8th grade that for high school, I convinced my parents to send me to a boarding school. I couldn't live at my house anymore. I couldn't deal with just the constant anger and abuse. It was horrible. And, you know, I fucked that up. I went there and I found the same group of people. You know, it doesn't matter where I go. I know who you are. I will find you and we will get drunk, you know, and cause havoc. It doesn't matter where I go. I got thrown out for doing stupid shit there. Went back home, and I got my ass kicked because my parents spent a good amount of money on that school. And I ended up going back to public school, and, you know, found my friends there. And I, again, don't know how I graduated high school. I rarely ever went. I skipped classes. I went to the beach as much as possible. I was always lucky that, you know, I'm a very intelligent person. I never really had to study too much for exams or go to class. And I was just able to show up a few days and pass the exams and piss my teachers off and just get pushed through. God, so much. I'm going to skip through a lot more of that and get to my first bottom. My first bottom was horrible. You know, I got an intervention, but I was living in a very questionable home with some very questionable people doing things I don't ever want to admit, which I already have, but nothing I'm going to admit here. You know, and I had an intervention. My family, they got together, and, you know, they gave me a choice, and I was already at a point where I needed help. I just didn't know how to ask for it. I wanted to be done with what I was doing. And, you know, I got sent to a treatment center, and I really soaked it in. I really got it. You know, I understood what was going on with me. And, you know, I dug in. I started going to AA all the time. You know, I started going to church again, made friends in AA, you know, did the service work. Never made it past the fourth step. I sat on that fourth step for almost 2 years. So I was pretty miserable after about the six-month mark. You know, I was just living in misery, and I was working. I was going back to school. Ended up getting accepted into the University of Florida. And when I got there, I didn't go to any meetings. I didn't create a new network. I stopped calling alcoholics, and then I lasted a month. You know, I started drinking again. I don't even remember going to classes at the University of Florida. All I remember is partying. Somehow I graduated twice, and I made it out. I got a great job, and I was drinking heavily. I would work and drink, and that's it. Took about 2 years of that misery to the point where I tried to kill myself. You know, it was the pain of living outweighed the pain of just throwing it all away. Obviously, I was unsuccessful. And I'm here today. But at that point, I was put back into a treatment center again. That was about a year ago. And, you know, I started remembering again everything that was taught to me at the first treatment center. And, you know, I can't figure out, you know, at first I couldn't figure out what was going wrong or what I did wrong. And then, you know, as I moved through it, I talked with my sponsor, other alcoholics. I didn't work the steps, and that was what was wrong. You know, I dug in as soon as I got here. You know, going to AA meetings, I'm involved with service work. I have two home groups. One of them, we go back to the treatment center that I was at. You know, the Florida Conference for Young People in AA. You know, I do as much as I can, wherever I can, for service work there. And I've been through the steps. You know, I sat on step four. I don't know why. I sat on it for a while until the pain got great enough. You know, about six-month mark, I started going fucking crazy. You know, I didn't know up from down, left from right. I was making decisions that hurt other people and affected my life and other people's lives. And my sponsor finally just pushed me and said, we need to finish the steps. And we did. And it was around that time I went to the Florida Conference for Young People in AA. And it changed my perspective to see all those young people there, you know, having a good time in sobriety. And what I saw the most was the host committee that were putting on the conference. they were working hard, but they were smiling. They were having a good time. And I wanted that. You know, I wanted to feel like I was doing something to help other people, and I wanted to be happy doing it. And, you know, that's what changed in me. You know, it changed my whole perspective. I got involved with service work. I'm happier today than I think I've ever been in my life. You know, it doesn't mean I don't come across shitty situations. My first year in sobriety was tough. You know, I'm going through a divorce somewhat, and, you know, I'm just crazy. You know, I've had two deaths. One of them was my uncle that was close to me, and, you know, I stayed sober because today I know that I need to, you know, I need to ask for help. You know, I can't do this shit on my own. And I've tried that before, and it just got me drunk. You know, I'm going to be going back through the steps again, and hopefully it's going to be with a sponsee. And I look forward to it. I really do. I love helping people. It makes me feel good. And, you know, if I need to be selfish to help other people, I'm going to, because I'm going to do whatever it takes to stay sober this time, because I don't want to go back to that misery. I don't want to die. You know, I'm happy living. I'm happy being around here. And if I have another drink, I'm going to die. I know that for a fact. You know, so that's about it.
Hi, I'm Katie. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Katie.
I'm incredibly nervous, even though it's not a large crowd. I just did the podium, but the flowers they put up for me are really nice. So, all right. My sobriety date is January 31st, 2013. I have a wonderful sponsor, and I'm available to sponsor others. All right, what it was like. I grew up in South Tampa to amazing parents. I feel like Rich pretty much told a lot of my story already, but I was not a very attractive child. I wore like really giant glasses, and my teeth were messed up, and I was about this tall, and there was just I got picked on a lot, and I would come home from like first grade. And I would break my glasses in half. And I'm blind as a bat, so I'd walk into walls and I'd still break my glasses. And my dad would go and buy me the same pair. So I was pretty much screwed on that. So I would have to wear these giant, like, ice pink colored glasses that were, like, thick. And I got picked on. And, you know, it sucked. But, I don't know, I just... Sorry. Okay, so childhood. So I got picked on a lot in elementary school, and it really scared me a lot. Like, I would come home, and I would just hide out in my room. I wouldn't do anything. I wasn't, like, you know, much of a spontaneous child. I was just very alone and sad and depressed, and I didn't know it at the time. You know, I'm, like, 5, 6 years old. And I have an older sister who... helped with it. You know, she would pick on me and she would, you know, make me call her princess. I don't know why. Make me braid her hair, you know, all this other stuff. And so my childhood kind of was a little rocky. And then, you know, as I got older, I remember, well, my dad was a heavy drinker. And I've heard a lot of people speak and they say, you know, oh, my mom or my dad were heavy drinkers and I wanted nothing to do with it. I was going to grow up and not be like that. But it was different for me. My dad was a very happy drunk. And I remember the first time I ever really saw him drunk, I was probably like 6 or 7 maybe. And my mom got us me and my sister out of bed at, I don't know what time, in the middle of the night, and held us at the front door while my dad stumbled to the front door because he was coming home drunk. And I vaguely remember, I think she said something like, this is your father, you know, or something to that extent. But my dad had the biggest cheesy smile on his face. And he was just like, hi, girls. you know, and I was just like, I'm going to be like that. I'm going to be like you, and it's going to be so much fun, and he listens to really loud music, and I literally was like, I'm going to grow up and be just like my dad. So, time goes on, and I was probably in, like, the middle school when I started to, like, really rebel, so to speak, and I was like, I'm going to smoke cigarettes. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to smoke cigarettes. So I started smoking cigarettes. I wasn't inhaling or anything like that. I would just smoke them and be like, I'm a cool kid, you know, and people like me now. And I remember I was in the eighth grade, and I started hanging out with this girl who was very rebellious, and we were always like getting into trouble and like getting separated in class, and she's the one that, you know, introduced cigarettes to me. And at that year, my parents came to me where they were like, I think you're old enough to wear contacts. And I was like, praise the Lord, I can get rid of these glasses. But they're like, but you have to put braces on. And I was like, this is a lose-lose. Like, I can't get out of it. And I didn't think braces were attractive back then. So I was like, all right, fine, I'll take the contacts. So I remember the first time putting contacts in my eyes, and I felt, like, amazing, you know? And it was probably around the same time, maybe a year earlier, that I tried my first drink. And I don't really remember much of it. It wasn't like a spontaneous, like it wasn't like a huge, huge thing for me. I remember stealing a bottle of wine from my dad, and it was like a half a bottle or maybe like a quarter of a bottle. And my younger stepsister was with me, and we sat on the bed of his truck and just drank this wine. It was white wine. And I remember thinking I didn't like the taste of it. It was too like bitter for me. But she was laughing and having fun, and she fell off the back of the truck, and I was just like, this seems fun, I'm just going to drink it. And that was my first time drinking. I didn't drink for a long time after that. It wasn't like a huge thing for me. I wasn't like, this is it. That wasn't my this is it moment. And so I kept hanging out with this girl in eighth grade, and she ended up getting kicked out of school. So I was like, this is the end. Like, I didn't know what to, she was my only friend. I didn't know what to do. So I just kind of stuck to myself, and then high school came, and I was, like, terrified of high school. It was a big school, and it was just little old me, and I had braces, and I was not happy. So I go to this school, and that's when I started dating this guy who I was with for a few years, and he was in college at the time when I was in high school. So he was partying all the time and on the weekends. So I would make it a point that every Friday night I would give him $20 out of my paycheck, because he didn't work. I would give him $20 out of my paycheck, and we would go to the bar together. And he would get me in. And this was my big aha moment. And we were at this bar, and I'm drinking, because I guess he knew someone, I don't know. But I was drinking, and I was wearing these really high heels and trying to like look like I'm old enough to drink. Granted, I'm like 16, 17 years old. And so I get really, really plastered, and I don't remember the rest of the night. I remember singing Celine Dion and doing random things, I don't know. And the next thing I know, I'm like throwing up over the side of the railing on the patio part. And then they're like, we need to get her home. And then that's it. I wake up the next morning at some person's house that I had no idea who they were. I didn't know where my car was, and I only had one shoe. So I'm like, what happened last night? This is great. You know, I wanted to know all the details. And they were just like, you're a mess. I accumulated the nickname Noodle, because when I drink, I just fall. I can't stand up straight. I'm like a noodle. So I accumulated that nickname. I became the little noodle of the group. And so I keep dating this guy who's, you know, he definitely is not the reason I am an alcoholic today, but he pretty much introduced me to drinking heavily. And so I kept drinking with him, and, you know, we would party every single weekend. And it got to the point where I literally forgot my first period class because I didn't go. I forgot who the teacher was. I was like, what class? I remember going to the office one day and asking them for my schedule. It was like, oh, the year was almost over. And I was like, hey, do you have my schedule for classes? I don't really remember my first period. And so I skipped a lot of school and just hung out with him. And like the main thing was I just wanted to like go to McDonald's, because that seemed to cure my hangovers at the time. So I would just eat and then go to like halfway through school, and then I would leave, and then I would just go home, sleep it off, and then know I was going to go out that night. And that was the extent of my like junior and senior year. I don't know how I graduated. I do know I couldn't graduate with my class on time because I was down by like a credit or two, so I had to take summer school. And somehow I crammed in 2 credits in a month. I don't know how I did it. God really wanted me to graduate high school. So I walked with about 5 different other schools, and you know, that was like the first time I ever saw my dad cry, was when I walked down the aisle. And you know, I was like, all I cared about at that point wasn't, oh, I'm getting my high school diploma. It was, where are we going afterwards? You know, what party's going on? What kind of alcohol can we get? I'm not old enough. I have to find someone. And like, this is all racking through. Not like the normal things, like I'm going to trip and fall on the stage, or, you know, I'm going to, you know, do something stupid in front of everybody. All I thought about was just drinking. So I graduated high school and I turned 18. And that was phenomenal because I was like, now I can buy my own cigarettes. Like, that was a great time. So I'm, you know, partying every weekend, which after high school turned into about 3 or 4 times in the week and the whole weekend. So pretty much all week. And I remember my dad telling me, and I'm living with my dad at the time, telling me he was going to go to Vegas for the weekend and that I'm an adult and he trusts me. And I was like, great, go, have fun. I'm not going to have a party, Dad. And so we're, you know, I left work early that day because I had to get a job now that I was 18. I left work early that day, and because I had a headache, is what I said. But I really wanted to go home and plan my party. So I go home and I called the boyfriend over and I was like, we have to have people over. We're going to have a great time tonight. So I literally had like 6 people, including me and the boyfriend. So there was 4 other people there. And before anyone even got there, him and I drank a handle of Jack. No, not Jack, Captain Morgan. Sorry, Captain Morgan. And so I'm drinking this, and I'm feeling a little toasty. I'm feeling nice and warm and fuzzy inside. And then my friends get there with like 4 cases of beer. And I was like, this is going to be a great party. So we're all drinking, we're having a good time, and you know, my boyfriend at the time, when he would drink, he would sometimes get violent. Like, he would just want to fight something or someone or anything. Like, we would be in a McDonald's drive-thru, and he would want to fight the person in front of us because they were taking too long. So I would have to calm him down, which wasn't an unusual thing for me. I would calm him down a lot and just put him to bed, and he was fine. That night was a little different, and one of the girls there, like, hit on me. And, you know, whatever happened, and he got really, really upset. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to put him to bed. Everyone just go home. Everyone get out, go home. And this is like, you know, 1 or 2 in the morning anyways. And it didn't end there. And he ended up hurting me physically really bad. And I had to go to the hospital that night. And the worst part about it was I couldn't tell if my equilibrium was messed up or if I was just that drunk. And so I got to the hospital and, you know, my parents are there, and they're I'm over 18, so they're like, you have to press charges. And I was like, I'm not pressing charges. I love him. We're going to be together forever. And this isn't the first time that he put his hands on me. So, but I always thought it was my fault. I had too much to drink that night, or I did something to upset him, or, you know, whatever the case may be, I always thought it was my fault. And so finally, after my mom is a very convincing woman, she said, I press charges. So I press charges. I ended up dropping them a little later, which, whatever. But so that happened, and I don't really know like where I took the turn for the worst, or where like my drinking became from heavy to alcoholic. But it was probably right around that year. This happened in December of 2005, and in April of 2006, I had to have surgery on my ear, and leading up to the surgery, all I did was drink. I couldn't live in my dad's house anymore, so I moved out, and I was living in this like garage in the backyard of someone's house. And I didn't leave it. I smoked inside of it. I drank. I did not leave that garage. And you know, I got a dog, so I was like, this is going to be my friend. I became very isolated, very lonely, just very depressed. And I didn't see it. Like, I just thought, this is normal, I'm coping, I'm dealing with things, you know, this is okay. So all I'm doing is drinking there. I got a job at what some of you might know as the Dallas Bowl. And that was probably a big mistake. But I invited people over just to drink afterwards. You know, it's 4 a.m, let's go drink. And so that's all I did for a while. And then after my surgery, it took a turn for the worst. I still lived in that little apartment, and I'm telling you, it was gross. It was so disgusting. And my poor dog, like, I never walked him. He would poop and pee on the floor, and I would get mad at him for it. I would yell at him for pooping and peeing on the floor, but I didn't take him out. And it was rough. But so I had my surgery, and then finally the guy that was living in the house was like, you have to leave. And I was like, well, where am I supposed to go? You know, I don't have anywhere to go. So where did I live after that? I think I lived my sister. Yeah, I lived in my sister's one bedroom apartment and told her that she can go stay with her boyfriend, that I'll keep the house secure. And I would turn her air conditioning down to like 50, and she would have like these outrageous bills that I never paid. Like, God forbid if I have to pay your bills, it's your bills. And so I lived there for a little while, and I just pretty much bounced around from house to house. Let me crash at your house, let me crash at your house. I didn't have a home, so to speak. A couple nights I would sleep in my car, which at the time was a really crappy car. It was like a Geo Metro. It was cute. And I would sleep in that. And then my sister, would, she moved in with her boyfriend. So I then took over her lease, which I still didn't pay, for like 4 or 5 months. And in this time frame, I meet this guy who was, I met him in high school a couple times, and I thought he was the most annoying person I'd ever met. And I met this guy, he came over one night with one of my friends and was like, let's drink, let's have fun. I was like, if you're coming, bring alcohol. If you don't bring alcohol, don't come to my house. So they came over with one case of beer, and I looked at them, like I opened the door with a cat in my arms, and I looked at them and I was like, there's three of us. You really think that's going to be enough? Like, go back to the store and get more. They did not. I was highly upset. So I just, like, slammed the door, and, like, they ended up coming in, and we hang out, and the other guy leaves, so it's just me and this kid. And we're drinking, and we're having a good time. And the next morning I woke up, and there was a rose on my table outside with a ring on it. And it was his class ring. I just met him. So he was, like, in this card that was, like, blank on the inside, but, like, novel on both sides. So I'm, like, reading it, and I'm like, wow, this guy's nuts. Like, he's giving me his class ring. I just met him last night. Whoa. He was Looney Tunes. So within, like, maybe a month or two, we got really close. And the next thing I know, he asked me to marry him. Okay, I want the big white dress, the wedding, I want everyone to look at me, and I did it for all the wrong reasons. Like, I didn't even know anything about this guy. So I said yes, and then about a month later, he was like, I'm leaving, can you take me to the airport? And I'm like, where are you going? He's like, I'm going to Germany. And I'm like, why? He's like, I'm in the military. And I'm like, what? I had no idea I'm marrying this man, I don't even know he's in the military. So my first thought was, okay, well, do I get to keep your truck? You know, since you're leaving and you're not going to have to take your truck, do I get to keep it? And I did. I got to keep the truck for like a week. And so I take him to the airport, and I remember him leaving, and he's all tears and crying. I'm going to miss you so much. And I'm like, okay, bye. Like, go. I have a long drive home, because I had to drop him off in Orlando for a flight for that. And so I'm just like, all right, go, bye. I had no idea anything about, I didn't know his favorite color. I didn't even know anything about him. I didn't even know what size shirt he wore. And so I'm going to get married. I call my mom and I'm like, Mom, I'm getting married. And she's like, to who? And I'm like, well, this guy, you met him once, I think. And she was like, okay. So my mom, poor lady, planned a wedding in like a week. And I have this beautiful wedding. My mom, you know, paid for everything. And, well, it was supposed to be planned, like, for the following year, like, months later. And he calls me and was like, I'm getting leave to come home for a week. We have to do the wedding now. And I was like, okay. And I got pissed because it was taking into my time of hanging out with my friends and partying. Because he introduced me to his whole group of friends, which that's all I hung out with. I would sit in their room and play Guitar Hero and drink beer all night long. That was like my life for many months. And I got really good at Guitar Hero. So that's what I did. And so he calls me and says this, and this was in October. This was the end of September, and he said he was coming home at the beginning of October, and we were supposed to get married, like, the following year, like, a way later. So I was like, okay, so I called my mom, and I was like, Mom, we need to do this now. Like, you got to get your card out. We got to pay for this now. So she pays for the wedding. The wedding was great. And then he comes up to me after the end of the wedding, and was like, so when are you going to move to Germany? And I looked at him, I was like, you are insane. I'm not moving to Germany. Like, what is wrong with you? And he's like, well, we're married now. And I'm like, crap. So within, I want to say 2 months, I was living in Germany. I got a passport and I moved to Germany. I couldn't tell you one thing about that country. I knew how to say, where's the bathroom in German? And that's about it. I found two bars that became my favorite place to be. And that's it. I never really saw daylight there. I was a very night person when I lived there. And one of them was a country bar, which really excites me. And the other one was a little Irish bar. It's kind of weird, but... And so, like, that's where I stayed. I stayed in those bars. And I remember one time he told me he was leaving, that the night was over, we had to go. Well, bars are there 24 hours open. I was like, this is amazing. I don't know why I didn't come sooner. And you know, I'm 20 at the time. So I'm underage for you know, here. I couldn't drink here legally, but I can totally drink there because there was, like, a 13-year-old at the bar with me. And we're just chatting it up. And so I'm living in these bars, and he was, and one night he was like, we have to go, it's late, you know, it's time to go home. And I was like, no, I'll cab it, just go. And he was like, no, you're leaving. And I was like, he touched my arm. He did not grab me in any certain way or any kind of inappropriate way. He just, like, grabbed my arm and was like, we're leaving. And I, like, smacked him, and I was like, you're leaving, I'm staying right here. And I ended up, we weren't in military housing yet. We were in this, like, economy housing, which is on the German economy, and the name of it was, like, some weird Hackintosh, I don't know how to say it, name. So I ended up, like, drinking until about 7 in the morning and realized, I have to go home, I'm out of Euro, I don't know what else to do. So I get this taxi, and he comes, and he's, you know, he's a German guy, and you have to talk really slow to them, and that's something I cannot do when I'm drinking. So I'm, like, trying to tell him where I live, and I couldn't say the name of it. And he took me to some weird place, and he's like, here we are. And I'm like, this is not where I live. And he was like, well, that's what you told me. And I was like, why does everything have to sound the same out here? So I got really frustrated, and they finally had to call, like, the military police. And they came, and they're like, who's your husband? And I told them, and they were like, okay, you live here. And it was really, like, probably about an hour away from where the cab driver took me. And I finally get home, and I'm to the point of exhaustion. Like, I'm just, like, about to pass out on the ground outside. And I get upstairs, and I just pass out. And the next morning I wake up, and, like, all my bags are packed. And I'm like, what's going on? I can't leave. Like, this is heaven. Like, I'm not going anywhere. Luckily, I didn't go anywhere. We were moving into actual housing. So that was great. And then he buys me a puppy. I couldn't even take care of my first dog. That one was living with my mom now. And he buys me this puppy, and we lived on, like, the sixth floor. Well, it's the third floor, but it was two flights per floor, so it felt like the sixth floor. So I bought the dog a pillow, like a pillow for your head, and I was like, this is your pee pad. Pee on the pillow. And I trained the dog to pee on the pillow. And so, and it's funny, because I think I may still have pictures of her somewhere, and there's, like, this yellow and white pillow in the background. Pretty gross. So that's what I would do. I would not walk her, and I pretty much would live in my apartment. I would make him, when he would leave for work, go buy me cigarettes and alcohol to make sure I'm stocked for the day, and I would literally sleep all day and drink all night. That was my life in Germany. And, you know, it's sad now, because I wish I would have explored the country a little better, but, you know, at the time I didn't really care. So, you know, I started to realize the more I stayed there that, you know, we weren't compatible. He was a nutso. And so I was like, I have to get out of this. Like, I want to go back to the States. And so at that point I was like, all right, I'm going to leave. And he said, no, you're not. And he tried to burn my passport. I attract crazy people. So he tried to burn my passport, and I I punched him, I think. I don't, or kicked him. I did something. He fell, and I ran, and it was very dramatic, like the movies. I'm, like, running in the snow, and I'm like, save me. And so finally I get to come home by tricking him because my best friend was getting married. And I was like, look, I'm the maid of honor. I have to go home. I have to be in her wedding. But I'll come back. And he was like, okay. So I had him buy me a plane ticket. And I was like, no, don't get a round trip. You know, I don't know when I'm coming back because I'm going to help her, you know, get back. Because she lived in Massachusetts at the time, but she was going to get married in Florida because that's where her family is. So I was like, I'm just going to fly to Florida. I'm going to see her. And then we're going to have the wedding. And then I'm going to drive back up to Massachusetts with her and make sure everything gets, you know, settled in okay. And then I'll come back to Germany. It's going to be a month-long process, so don't get me a round trip. So he buys me this ticket. I don't know why, but he buys me this ticket, and I'm, like, packing all my stuff. And I don't know why this kid didn't realize it at the time, but the one thing, I have this show, The OC, and I packed that, and he's like, why are you taking The OC? Out of everything that I packed, that's what he asked me about. And I was like, oh, I just want to watch it on the plane. I don't know what I said. I made it something stupid. So I get back to Florida, and she was supposed to pick me up. My plan was to leave the next night, the next morning. I get back on a night, and I was supposed to leave the next morning for Massachusetts. And I remember getting back, and I wanted to surprise my dad. Like, look at me, I'm like you now. Like, we can party now. We can do this together. And I get there, and, you know, he had went to this basketball game or something, so I surprised him. And we drank all night long. And I remember wanting McDonald's, so I took my house phone because I didn't have a cell phone, and I walked to McDonald's. And, like, I don't actually remember leaving. I just came, I was blacked out, and then I came to walking down the street with a bag of McDonald's and my house phone, my dad's house phone. And then Chad, my ex-husband, was in my driveway. And I was like, how did you get here? You were not here yesterday. Like, what are you doing here? So that was, like, a huge thing. But he was, apparently he came to and was, I don't know, it was really weird. It was like a giant blackout for me. And so I get to go, well, I'm going to the airport, and I'm, like, retarded drunk. And I get there, and they wouldn't let me on the plane. And I was, like, causing a scene, and I was, like, yelling at these policemen. And I'm like, listen, you don't know me. I'm fine. I have to go to Massachusetts. And me being the irresponsible person that I am, I did not get on the plane, but I didn't call my friend to let her know. So she's driving around the airport looking for me. I didn't have a cell phone at the time because it was a German phone. And so she's, like, worried. And I finally, like, my sister, I don't know where, I ended up somewhere in St. Pete. And then my sister picked me up. It was a giant blur. And I ended up leaving to go to Massachusetts the next day. So I moved to Massachusetts. And, well, I went to Massachusetts, so to speak. And then I decided I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to live here. I'm going to start over. You know, it was a little messy back home. I drank a little too much. I'm going to start over and get a job and do the right thing. So I get this job at a restaurant, and I'm doing okay for a little bit, and then I turn 21. And I was like, oh, well, I have to have a legal drink in the U.S. Like, it's got to happen. So I go, I'm on my way home, and I buy a six-pack of beer, and I stop, and I drink, and, or I go home, and I drink, and then my friends are like, well, we have to go to the bar. And I was like, yeah, let's do this. So I go to the bar, and I'm drinking. I started drinking beer, and what's that saying? Don't drink beer first or something. Like, if you drink beer first, you get sicker. I don't know, but it's true. If I drink beer before I drink liquor, I get really sick. And that's what I did, because that's what I do. And I drank, like, the six-pack at home, and then I went to the bar, and I was drinking these fruity little pink-looking things. And they were really good, and I had, like, a little umbrella, and it was really good. And I'm playing pool, and all I remember of that night was playing pool and then waking up in the hospital. And this was one of my first hospital visits. I'm sitting there playing pool, doing my thing, and then I wake up, and I have a horrible headache, and I'm like, what is going on? And I lost a little bit of memory because I tried to call the girl I was living with, Danielle. I tried to call her cell phone from high school, and it wasn't working. And then I thought I was in Florida, and I was not in Florida. And it was very confusing for me, but apparently I fell on my head the night before, and my brain was bleeding. So I I then was like, okay, I'm not going to drink anymore. I was in ICU for 7 days. I was like, I'm not drinking anymore. This is it for me. I'm done. This is too much trouble. I'm, you know, that's when the consequences started. I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. About a week later, I crashed my car by hitting a person that I knew in front of me because I didn't know they were stopping. That's my story. And so I crashed my car, and then I'm like, of course I had been drinking. And I was like, all right, I'm really done this time. I'm going back to Florida, and I'm going to turn over a new leaf. I'm going to go to school. I'm going to do the right thing. So I come back to Florida, and I get this job at a restaurant. And the people, and I don't know if anyone's ever worked in a restaurant, but it's a huge party industry. You know, like everybody wants to go out and party after work. That's just what you do. So I was like, well, I can't say no. They're my new friends. So I go out with them, and every Tuesday night we used to go to this bar, and we would call it Blackout Tuesday. And we literally would go to blackout. Like, that was our intention. I did not think I was an alcoholic, guys. So I was like, yeah, let's do this. So I went, and then I fell on my head again. And my brain was bleeding, and I had to go back to the hospital. And at this point, my mom was like, you need help. And I was like, no. No, I think you just need help dealing with me. And so I tell her no. Well, finally she talks me into it, and we go to Turning Point, which is a treatment center here in Tampa, and they did this questionnaire thing on me, and they're like, did you do this, 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 and this? And, you know, I told them everything. I didn't lie to them or anything like that. And they were like, okay, well, you qualify. You can stay. And I was like, great. What does that mean? And they're like, well, you can do our inpatient or we have an outpatient. And I was like, I'll do the outpatient. Like, I don't want to stay here. It's a little weird, so I don't know you guys. So I'll do the outpatient. So I did not do the outpatient. I never went back there. And then I ended up totaling my car on the interstate. And like two nights later, I went to a really dark place when I came back to Florida from Massachusetts. And I, you know, I, like a couple nights after I totaled my car, like head on into the wall, I tried to commit suicide. And I was like, this isn't working. I physically can't stop drinking. I'm going to take my life. Like, I can't do this anymore. And luckily I didn't, because I did it all wrong. And I ended up in a psych ward. And while I was in the psych ward, you know, I realized like a lot of things while I was in there. You know, I met some weird people, and I was like, all right, I'm going to try this out. You know, my mom had been telling me about AA for a while. Like, she had done research on it and stuff. And I was like, all right, I'll try this out. So I went to my first meeting, and this was in October of 2012. And I walked in, and there was five people, and I got there late. So there was, well, like a minute late, there was five people, and my mom and my sister came with me. So there was eight of us total. And they were sitting around this really round table, and it was really weird. Everyone was like double my age, and I was just like, I don't know what to think. And then the first thing that I sit down, and the lady hands me How It Works. At the time, I had no idea what that was. And I looked at her, and I was like, do I pass it? Like, what am I supposed to do with this? Do I just keep passing it down? And they're like, oh, we would like you to read. And I looked at her, and I was like, then my mom started crying and my sister started crying. I read like one line, and I was like, I just pushed it into the middle of the table. And I was like, okay, I'm done. And that was my first experience of AA, and it scared the living crap out of me because it was weird and it was creepy and I didn't like it. And so I'm walking out, and my sister, there's like waterworks on both sides of me. And I'm walking out like, okay, guys, I'm just going to go drink again. It's fine. So I walk out, and this lady's like, I want to be your sponsor. And I looked at her. I was like, who are you? No. So I left, and, of course, I kept drinking. More consequences happened. You know, I hit a paper stand with my car. I hit a couple trees. I've gone through my fair share of cars. And for the grace of, like God has been by my side through all of it, because I don't know how I didn't break any bones even. Like, I walked out with a scratch on my arm. And so I was then, like, I lost my job, so I was literally drinking every single day. Like, every single day I was going to the store until I ran out of money. And then when I ran out of money, I went to my mom, and she was like, no, I won't help you. I'm done with you until you get help. And, like, the look in her eyes when she said that to me, I knew she was serious. Like, I could manipulate my mom in every different way, shape, or form, but this time I knew I couldn't. So finally I was like, all right, I'll get help. So I checked myself into Turning Point. And, you know, I stayed there for 21 days. And that was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, even though I didn't really talk for the first, like, 18 days. But I listened a lot. And they said a lot of things in there that was me, you know, that I could relate to. And, like, they took me to meetings that were normal. And, like, there was people there. And, you know, I had a totally different outlook on AA when I went to that one meeting. And then I went to, you know, my first meeting was a women's meeting. And there was women there with smiles and, like, holding their arms out, like, I love you, come hug me. And I'm like, you don't even know me. You don't know what I'm capable of. You don't know if I'm a mean person, you know, whatever. You don't know me. Why are you being so nice to me? And part of me at the time wanted what everyone else had. So I was like, all right, I'll stick around for that little part of me that wants it. And I did. And I stayed around until now. And, you know, I've had a lot of struggles in sobriety. It's not always going to be like a cakewalk. You know, I found out that I had cervical cancer in sobriety. And I'm okay. You know, I had surgery, and I didn't have to drink through it. You know, I've had two deaths in sobriety, one of which was this morning. And I'm still okay, you know, because they're not in pain anymore, and they're in a good place. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm not dying. You know, I'm okay, and this program is what saved me. You know, I got a sponsor, and I did the steps, and, you know, I sat on my fourth step for a little while, too. But, you know, I did the deal, and, like, as uncomfortable as it sounds and as uncomfortable as, like, picking up the phone and calling people, believe me, I'm still there sometimes, you know. I don't want to call people. I get into, like, this rut, and I'm just like, I'm good. You know, I got a job now that I've had for a long time. I have a relationship that's lasted longer than 4 months, which was my point. Like, I knew when I was at 4 months with a guy that they were going to break up with me. But this one's lasted almost 2 years, so I'm doing something right. And, you know, I have an amazing sponsor, and I have wonderful friends. And, like, this is, like, the life that I always wanted. And I never thought I could do it without drinking. I never thought for 1 second that I could be happy without drinking. But the truth of the matter is, like, I was so miserable when I was drinking. There was nothing that was, I couldn't even smile anymore when I drank. I would just drink just because I needed to. I drank because that's what I knew. That's the only thing that I knew that I could turn to. I didn't know that there were you guys out there that were there for me, you know? And, with that, Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.